Good morning. Welcome to Island Issues, Friday morning style. I'm Harry Blaylock, along with Louis Tenorio. Good morning, Louis. Oh, I'll tell you what, Friday sounds sweet this morning, doesn't it? It's a great, great day. And this is June 1st, and I can tell that May is gone, because all of a sudden today in history, well, there's some things to talk about. Yeah, it's a few things here. Well, let's go back to a couple of events. 1792, Kentucky became the 15th state. Tennessee followed up in 1796, becoming the 16th state. 1869, Thomas Edison of Boston, Massachusetts, received a patent for his electric voting machine. And here to think we're still using paper and pencil. I don't know, something seems wrong there. But 1925, Lou Gehrig of the New York Yankees played the first of what would become 2,130 consecutive baseball games. That means never took a day off. Amazing. He set a major league record that wouldn't be broken until Cal Ripken Jr. of Baltimore did so in 1995. Gehrig wasn't even a starter on that day. He was inserted in the lineup for Wally Pipp. Let's see. One or two more things today in history. Then we'll get into the birthdays. 1967, the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was released. You remember any of the songs from that one? Yeah, okay. Take the obvious one. That one works. Okay. 1975, Nolan Ryan of the California Angels tied the no-hit record of Major League Baseball. He tossed his fourth career no-hitter with a 1-0 win over the Baltimore Orioles. And Nolan Ryan, of course, a very famous split-ball pitcher. 1987, knuckleballer Phil Niekro won game number 314 by leading the Indians to a 9-6 win over the Tigers. I always hate it when the Tigers are on the losing end, but what can you say? He and his brother Phil, brother Joe, brought the record to 531 career wins between the two of them, breaking a record set by the Perry brothers. And with that, you ready for a few birthdays? All right, let's see who you remember. 1801, Brigham Young. Mormon? Yep. Okay, good enough. That's all I need to hear. Yeah. What more do you need to say about Brigham Young? So, founder of the Mormon Church, 1921. Here's one's a little tougher for you. Nelson Riddle. Yeah. But shame on you, because it does figure into popular music and recent music. He did a collaboration with Linda Ronstadt a few years ago, and the Nelson Riddle Orchestra backing up Linda Ronstadt. Very, very popular songs in about 1981 or two, and he passed away in 85, so this was right before his death. 1926, Andy Griffith. Yeah, that's the one. Facing the Crowd, No Time for Sergeants, From Here to Eternity. Just a whole slew of shows that he's been in. 1926, Norma Jean Baker Mortensen. Oh, I'm impressed, Louis. Yeah, very good. All right. Some of her movies include Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, The Seven-Year Itch, and, of course, in Playboy, linked to JFK, all kinds of things, and a very untimely death. 1934, Pat Boone. Yep, that's the guy. Love Letters in the Sand is probably his most popular. Married to Red Foley's daughter, Shirley. So, and Pat Boone is also the guy who made a few ripples a few years ago. I don't know if you remember when he dressed up in leather as a heavy metal guy. Yeah. Didn't go over real well. 1940, how about René Auberjonois? You know, I never get this guy's last name right. Auberjonois. Yeah, I don't know. He's in Benson. Benson, MASH, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Mrs. Miller, quite a few others. 1947, Ron Wood. Yeah, that's the guy. He's the guitarist for the Stones. And boy, he looks like he's lived a hard life. 1949, Powers Booth. Yeah. Okay. He's an actor, and the thing that I kind of remember him from is he was in Guiana Tragedy, the story of Jim Jones, back in 1980. And do you remember the Jim Jones cult that went down to Guiana and all the Kool-Aid thing? Well, after being in that, who really wants Jim Jones to be in your movie? So that was, you know, his career didn't really go anywhere after that, unfortunately. 1956, Lisa Hartman. Yeah. Really? You don't know Lisa Hartman? Oh. She's a hottie, but Knott's Landing, Bare Essentials, Deadly Blessing, Red Wing, but also married to Clint Black. Country singer? Okay. And I think I've got one song for you today. No, I've got two songs for you. 1968, I'm going to take you back away. First one is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. That was from a movie, a theme from a movie. Hugh Montenegro, very good. Okay, yeah. And do you remember Yummy, Yummy, Yummy? Okay. Ohio Express. Wow, a day that I actually stumped you. That's a rarity. That's just because I wasn't giving you any. All right, I'll give you an easier one. 1976. How about Get Up and Boogie? Yeah. You're going to have to sing the whole thing if you can't come up with the composer or the singer. No. Brothers Johnson, that's Strawberry Letter 23 you're thinking of, yeah. This is Silver Connection. Yeah. Yep, that's true. All right, I'll let you off the hook with that one, and let's get busy with our guests in studio this morning. I have Walt Goodridge with me. Good morning, Walt.
Morning, Harry.
It's good to have you in studio once again.
Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
How long has it been? A little over a year, I guess.
Yes, huh? 15 months about.
Okay, it's
first
been a while.
First time in Saipan, February of 2006.
Okay, and you kind of have a unique story. Tell me how you wound up on Saipan.
Well, since we have limited time, I'll give you the short version.
Okay.
A friend of mine who I had music industry involvement with years ago, he mm-hmm. visited Japan to do some music industry work, some production. The people who he was working with invited him to Saipan. He came, had a nice time. I found out about it. In fact, I had never heard about Saipan before December 18th of 2005.
Okay.
But one night, my friend and I were talking. We were in Brooklyn at a Christmas party, and he just started praising, you know, all the fun, all the excitement, all the warmth of the people, all the nice time that he yeah. had here. And I just something clicked in my mind, and based on the way he described it, I decided, hey, this is someplace I want to go. And I actually gave away all my records, picked up from New York, and just moved 8,000 miles across the sea to come check it out and to come start a new life. I was looking to reinvent myself at the time, so Saipan seemed like a nice place to do it. It was still on the U.S. postal system, which is important for my business.
And so, currency. Yeah.
Right, so I jumped across the seas and came here, and I've been here ever since.
How's that working out for you so far?
Yeah, it's great. It's
okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So no regrets in moving over here?
None at all. Just challenges.
Yeah, well, we all understand that.
Right.
There's a few of those.
Nothing major, but just yeah. one thing I know I mentioned to you before, I'm vegetarian, and
yeah.
and it is a little bit of a challenge, but not an insurmountable one, being vegetarian here on Saipan.
My wife turned vegetarian after we moved out here on me, mm-hmm. which I looked at as a breach in our wedding vows, but you know, I'm having a hard time upholding that one. But so she goes through the same struggles, but
right.
fortunately for me, there is meat here, and so you know, it kind of balances out and makes it a little more fair for me.
Right, right. But I'm not the only one, so I'm actually working with some
That's
people
true.
On island to, you know, to sort of bring in some of those.
Don't say that. I don't want her to hear that, so that's all I need.
So
it's more vegetarian food. Yeah. All right.
Tell your wife there's hope.
Well, Walt, let's talk a little bit about what you do. And you're kind of an interesting guy because you've taken some ideas and turned that into a way to make money and a way to make a living.
Right. What I do is I help people discover their passion in life and turn it into a business.
Okay.
My own story is I actually went to Columbia University and I majored in civil engineering, but I only ended up in engineering because my counselor in high school said, you're good in math and science, this is what you need to do.
You didn't realize it was such a boring job.
Not at all.
Yeah, okay.
But no offense to any of the engineers out there, I just wasn't cut out for it.
Yeah.
So I ended up in engineering, but I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, whenever I do my workshops, you know, within the first 15 minutes of my first day on the job in corporate America, I realized beyond the shadow of a doubt that I absolutely hated it.
That's a pretty bad realization to come to after all those years of college.
I was in the wrong place.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't like the whole concept of working for somebody else. I didn't like the concept of getting up in the morning before I was finished sleeping.
Yeah.
I didn't like the concept of someone telling me what I was worth. And that's a significant thing in that as long as you work for somebody else is deciding what your value is, what your worth is. And that's just something I couldn't relate to. So, to make a long story short, what I did is I jumped out on my own eventually and discovered what my passion was, and mm-hmm. it had to do with the music industry. And incidentally, I know Nelson Riddle, he was around way in the 40s as well as a band leader.
Yep.
But my passion was music, so I started a record label, I managed artists, and I moved from that into writing about the music industry. And there's an interesting story about how the light bulb came on about that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up writing about the music industry, showing other entrepreneurs how to start their own record label, and that morphed also into now showing people in general how to discover the thing that they are good at, the thing that they were put on the planet here to do, and find a way to use that to generate income so that they can make money doing what they love.
Hmm. Okay. Because a lot of people do have something that they really love to do, but very few of them actually make money at it.
Right, exactly. A lot of people undervalue themselves. They don't actually realize that people would pay for the things that they find interesting.
Yeah.
So what I do, one of the main things that I do is actually raise people's belief level by informing them of others who are doing the same thing, giving them some steps, some ways to think about their value themselves, why they're here on the planet, their purpose, the things that they love to do, so that they can move into a new paradigm and actually value the things that they do, but actually look at it now, not just as a pastime, not just as a hobby, not just as something that they enjoy, but something that they're actually here to offer the world in the form of some service or in the form of some product that can help other people as well.
And it's amazing that once you start exploring things like that, people usually are interested.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because it's a basic, you know, everyone has something that they were put on the planet to do. And one of the analogies I make for people is that every being on the planet, every form of life on the planet is inherently and naturally equipped with what it needs to survive. And we as humans are no different. We are part of the same divine plan. So you were put on the planet to achieve a particular purpose. And along with that comes certain skills and talents and interests that will help you manifest that purpose as well. So once you tap into that way of thinking, yes, the universe opens up and you start to realize possibilities and you start to recognize value that was there all the time, but you just weren't aware of it.
Okay. Myself, I can talk, and you know, people are always telling me, you just fell into it. Right. Here you get paid to talk, and I'm like, yeah, pretty much I did fall into it, and it worked out for me, but yeah.
Right, exactly. And that's not just the only thing, because I've also just learned, for those of you who are listening to the radio right now, that...
here we go.
I promised you this.
Yeah, yeah.
That Harry is a world-class underwater photographer, and you've actually gotten requests from people. You've put some of your work online and gotten requests from people.
I'm actually going to be in a book now, yeah.
You're going to be in a book, and people are actually requesting your work and paying you for it, or offering to pay you for it.
Yeah.
So it's that sort of thing. Once you realize that 9 times out of 10, something that you enjoy doing, something that you would do, even if there was no money involved,
exactly,
has value for other people that other people recognize. And it's those sort of light bulb moments that go on for people where someone says, hey, that's a great photograph. You know, how much? And if you realize the question is usually that's a great photograph, how much is it?
Mm-hmm.
So people inherently recognize that there is, in order for them to get the thing that you have just created, that there has to be some exchange of value. So it's not a great leap. To go from doing something as a pastime to doing something for money, because people recognize that there is an exchange of value going on, and they'll be willing to pay for it.
Now, for most people, is it safe to say that don't quit your day job before the other thing gets rolling pretty well? I mean, there's a lot of people that I'm sure have wheels going in their mind right now, and they're thinking, wow, yeah, well, I could quit my day job and do this too.
I have two answers for that.
Okay.
From my own experience, I quit my day job before. Well, okay. It was sort of a very short transition.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that different people have different personality types, and there are some people, if as long as they know that they have a back door, meaning that supplemental paycheck coming in from their regular 9-to-5 job,
mm-hmm,
they'll never give their passion-centered business the appropriate and necessary level of commitment that it deserves and that it needs in order to be successful.
Yeah.
Some people can. A lot of people can't. So in my case, I couldn't. So what I did, I jumped out on my own with no savings, you know, no real plan, and forced myself up against the wall to rise to the level of commitment that was necessary to make my business successful. And it didn't work initially. I went through a lot of ups and downs.
Okay.
Actually got, you know, evicted from my apartment a couple
of
times.
Wow. Yeah.
I tell that story not to scare people, but just to let them know that there are
some... A little reality check,
right,
yeah.
Right,
yeah. Okay.
Some, but the other side of that is, again, if you can find the level of commitment that's necessary in order to make your business, your passion-centered business successful, then yes, maybe you may want to hang on to one, transition into the other, or maybe just keep both of them going. There's no reason necessarily that you have to.
Yeah.
Some people like what they do on the 9-to-5.
Me, yeah.
I hated it, so I was looking for the first opportunity to jump out on my own.
Yeah.
But for other people, that pressure of having, you know, your landlord knocking on your door, knowing that you have your CUC bill to pay or whatever, is sometimes the motivation that you need in order to really commit yourselves to making that business work. So I could answer both ways, but I personally prefer burning bridges.
Okay. But now, in all fairness, you did have some income rolling in from your side things before you quit your engineering job, right?
I did.
Okay,
I did.
Yeah. So.
But what I didn't have was the full understanding of what that meant. Meaning, when I was matching my civil engineering income with my first book,
yeah,
I thought that I was running a successful side business.
Okay.
But I wasn't. It wasn't until I quit my job and jumped and had the side business sustain me fully that I realized I wasn't making
not quite enough. Huh? Yeah.
Not that it wasn't enough, but I wasn't making the decisions. Wasn't making sound decisions to keep it profitable. So after a while, it tanked. And when I didn't have the 9-to-5 to support it, then things became very clear that I wasn't really doing, you know, the right thing. So yes, I did have the side business, but I still had to go through that process of actually learning specifically what it took to keep a business running full time. And that couldn't have happened until I had quit my 9-to-5 job.
Okay. Now, the good thing about you going through this learning process and going through the ups and downs and a few failures along the way is that you kind of turned this into a how-to for other people that want to do it.
Right, exactly. I've learned a lot of things about marketing, about internet marketing, about discovering your value, about how to encourage people to find unique ways of marketing their passion. So I created something I call the Passion, Profit, Philosophy, and Formula, which is a four-step process for helping people, one, discover their purpose in life, two, figuring out the passion that can support it, and three, creating a product or service that they can market, and then four, marketing it for profit. So there are four P's: purpose, passion, product, and profit. And the first step is important. It's based on the belief that everyone is here for a particular reason. This is not just a random excursion here, you know, for us to make somebody else wealthy, but we're here for a particular purpose. There's something that we can contribute to the world, and a particular reason that we are here. So the first thing that I help people understand is what their purpose is. Why are you here on the planet? That's the operative question. What is the value that you're here to provide? And that can fall into one of four categories. And as you listen to this, ask yourself which one of these four resonates with you. You could be a creator, and if you're a creator, you're someone who's an artist, let's say, or a musician, someone who's here, a writer, someone who's here, a dancer, someone who's here to create something that didn't exist before.
Okay.
Or you could be a savior. If you're a savior, then the operative word in your life and your experience is healing and fixing. Mm-hmm. Are you the sort of person who's always healing people, healing systems, healing relationships, fixing things, or an inventor of sorts? Or you could be a guru. A guru is a teacher. So, and then you could be a guide. And to give you an example of guide, I usually turn to examples like Martin Luther King or Gandhi, someone, or politicians in general, who have a view of a better society and are interested in moving us as a whole towards that better society, guiding us in that direction. So are you a creator, a savior, a guru, or a guide? And these are not written in stone. It's basically just to give you a beginning template to sort of categorize what it is your possible purpose here is on the planet. So creator, savior, guru, or guide. So once you establish that, then your next step is to figure out what your passion is. What is it that you enjoy doing? What is it that you love doing? What is it that people have recognized that you have value contributing, but you may not have recognized yourself? What is it that people say, are you good in fashion? You know, wow, you always look so well put together, Harry. Can you give me some fashion tips? I'll pay you for it.
Really wouldn't mind it, Paul.
So what is it? What is your passion? What is the thing that you enjoy doing? And 9 out of 10 times what you'll find is that your passion helps you fulfill your purpose. There is a divine order to this whole game we're playing, and there is a reason why you have a particular talent and interest and skill, because it's going to help you manifest the purpose that you were put here on the planet to do. So you figure out your purpose, you figure out your passion, and then your next step, and I'll take a step back. There's a whole lot of questions that you can ask, a lot of exercises that you can do that I've also written about that can help people discover what their purpose is and what their passion is. So this is not something you have to do on your own. I've actually gone through, I guess my engineering background has me very anal when it comes to being specific.
Step by step.
So, and then the next step is figuring out what your product is. What is it, or your service? What is going to be the physical manifestation of your passion, such the thing that you are going to trade with the world for the things of value that you like? Because that's essentially what this is about. You're going to come up with something of value, trade it with the rest of the world, and the rest of the world is going to reward you in the form of money or favor or whatever it is.
But Or their services.
Yeah. But it's an exchange of value, and money is just a means of that exchange. So you figure out what your product is going to be, and then you market it for profit. And that can involve advertising. It can involve setting up a website. But there are steps that you can take to set up your business and to launch it to make a profit from your business. And that is essentially what I teach and what I coach and what my book, Turn Your Passion Into Profit, is all about, to help people through. And that's the short version. Usually I do 3-hour workshops to go through this entire process in detail, but that is it in a nutshell. But it also represents just a different way of thinking about why you're here. One of the first things that people usually ask themselves when they start moving into the workforce is, what kind of job can I get? And I'd like to help people change that internal conversation. Instead of what kind of job can I get, who is going to pay me, or what pays more, or what's a good industry to get in right now, it's a different question. What do I love to do? What's my purpose? What would fulfill me as a human being to be able to contribute? Not just, you know, what makes the most money. And what you'll find also a lot of times, if you do this right, the thing that you actually enjoy doing can actually be much more profitable than any paycheck that you can get from somebody. Because again, if you are working for somebody else, you're part of their dream. And in order to make it profitable for them, you cannot be the highest paid person in in that business plan. So
chances are they're going to pay you just what they have to keep you on. Yeah.
It's the saying, just enough to keep you from quitting.
That's right. Right. Well, Walt, there's a lot of people out there that have probably tried various things before. And, you know, you mentioned websites. And I know of, I don't know how many people that have said, you know what, boy, there's money to be made on the internet. I can make a fortune. I'm going to set up this website. And they've done it. and they've kind of flopped and it hasn't really gone anywhere. They haven't made any money. And there are steps that probably were left out in that process.
Right. Wow, that's a whole nother 3-hour workshop.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is there's a lot more to it than just simply saying, okay, I'm going to do this. Take the time to learn how to do it right if you're going to do it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
There is a process involved. In fact, one of the things I teach also is the way to think of a website. A lot of people, including myself, when I first got on the web, I had a pretty idealistic view of what would happen. I thought I could throw up a website. All of a sudden, people would magically discover it, and money would start pouring in.
Right.
But there is a process of marketing involved, advertising involved, that can take you. But again, since I've been doing this now since 97, the web part of it, I now have a process that can help people launch a website on a Monday, say, and start actually generating money on a Friday, actually sooner than that. But the steps are there. It's not that difficult. I'll give a hint. For example, if you launch a website today, there's absolutely no way that anyone on the planet knows that it exists. So one of the first things that you may want to do is invest in advertising, let's say on Google.com. They have a pay-per-click. Anyone who's done a search on Google, for example, will see on the sidebar their list of companies that have paid to be listed there for the particular thing that you're selling. And it's very cheap. I don't think there's an upfront cost, but you only pay anytime someone clicks on that on your ad and drives you to that site. In fact, one of our local entrepreneurs, Stars and Stripes, if you do a search on Saipan, you'll see, you know, enjoy an evening, an enchanted evening on the sea, starsandstripes.com, and that's some free advertising for you.
Okay.
For him. But yeah, it's that. That's one of the quickest ways for you to get jump started on the web once you launch a website.
Okay. So unless you have a million hits or something, you're going to be okay. But hopefully if you do have a million hits, it's going to generate enough income to pay for whatever the hits are.
And there are different ways. Yeah. People can either be buying your product without those million hits, or there are other ways that you can generate income. There's passive income that you can generate simply by having a website, even if you're selling nothing on that site.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you have a blog, for example, and people are coming every day to visit, Google also has, and Yahoo and other companies have, advertising. It's one program called Google AdSense, for example, where you can allow Google to post ads on your site for other products and services that are related to your content, and then you actually earn a few pennies every time someone clicks on those ads. So without doing a single thing except having a blog up on the internet, you can generate passive income, and there are people generating $20 a month, $30 a month, $100 a month, $1,000 a month just from passive advertising on their site. So you could go away for a month, not do a thing with your website, and come back and actually have generated money. So there are different channels and streams that exist out there for people to, and that's the thing. There's value. So you have a blog, and it's for you, it's just your ramblings about life, you know, life in the CNMI. But for other people on the other side of the world, it's really interesting, and they'll come and visit every day to check out your blog. And as they're scanning and as they're perusing your blog, they may see another ad on the side that interests them, and they click on it, and you've generated 5 cents.
Okay.
And enough people do that, and you can, you know, generate enough to buy lunch every year.
That's not a bad thing. Yeah, that's right. Now, Walt, if somebody is interested in this, let's say they've got an idea in the back of their mind, and they're like, boy, I've been wanting to try this for a long time, but I just don't know where to go. What do they need to do? Do they need to buy your book? Do they need to come to the workshop? Can they have consultations with you personally?
Well, they can do all of the above, except we don't have a workshop planned right now. So if there's some sponsor listening out there who would like to host one, then I'm very open to it.
Okay.
But yeah, they can check out the website, passionprofit.com, as a first step to take a free personality test to help them discover what their passion is. My information, my email address is on the website as well, passionprofit.com, and they can check that out.
Okay. And at this point, you're going to be on Saipan TFN, huh?
Yes. Until further notice, I'll be here. And so people, you know, people see me riding around on my bicycle on Beach Road.
Okay.
Be gentle with
me. Is that your main mode of transportation?
Right now, yes.
Okay. Well,
I'm just enjoying the scenery.
It's green.
I like the sunshine.
Yeah.
I'm originally from Jamaica, so I don't do the aircon thing or the...
Okay. I take it you're not a scuba diver.
Not yet, but...
Okay. So I was going to say, hauling your tanks on a bike, that'd be a little tough, yeah.
After seeing your pictures, I definitely know there's another world under the sea that I'm missing out on, so I'd definitely like to check that out.
You know, and people come here, I can't tell you how many times I've had people come here, usually teachers, and right before they get ready to leave, they'll say, hey, can you take me on a dive? I've always wanted to know what it's like, and I'll take them, and they're like, oh man, I'm leaving in 2 days, I've never done this before, and I'm like, I'm sorry to tell you, you know, it's awesome down there.
Right,
yeah,
right,
it is.
No, I've seen it.
So as long as you're out here, yeah, you ought to take advantage of it and give it a shot. But is there anything else that you want to share with us? Any information?
Well, funny you should ask, and you might regret that, Harry.
Okay.
As you know, a couple of days ago, I did a talk at the Rotary Club.
Yep.
And someone there asked me a question. They asked, how can we stimulate the economy? How can we revitalize the economy? And I gave a short answer at that point. But I've been doing some thinking since then, and I do have some answers to that. I don't know if you want to...
Let's hear it, because we can all use a little help right now.
All right. First of all, let me say that when people ask... and you'll have to monitor the time on this one because I've been known to ramble on for 3 hours, so you feel free to cut me off. When people ask, how can we re-stimulate the economy, how can we revitalize, a lot of times what they're really asking is how can we, they have a limited view of what that success looks like. So they're actually asking, how can we get things back the way they were? Mm-hmm. They're, you know, a certain reliance on tourism or what have you. And I'd like to suggest, however, that the new Saipan, the Saipan that emerges from this particular downturn in the economy may not look anything like it did in the past.
Right.
So one of the things that I'd like to suggest to people is that in order to answer that question, first of all, it's a question that has many different layers and many different facets to it, but I can answer it from my perspective. And everyone, in my opinion, can only answer it from the perspective that makes sense to them. Mm-hmm. And with 60,000 people on the island, let's say there are at least 60,000 different answers to the question, question, how can we stimulate the economy? But the first thing that's going to be required, I think, is that we're going to need to ask different questions.
Okay.
All right. And the second thing that's going to be needed is that you're going to have to question the status quo. Why do things have to be the way that we've always expected them to, always thought that they were, okay? And the third thing is what I've noticed in talking to people is we're gonna have to avoid what I call limiting absolutes. If I suggest an idea, let's say, of how we can get an industry going here on Saipan, how can we stimulate the economy, somebody might say, well, you know, that'll never work here on Saipan, yada, yada, yada. Or we tried that before, and this is the way things are. And that's what I call a limiting absolute. It's a broad sweeping generalization about the way things are, and it's usually formed in a way that limits our creativity and our way of thinking and our way of emerging from what we're going through. So we're going to have to avoid that in our way of thinking. And then the major thing is we're gonna have to take a leap of faith. And the leap of faith that I'd like to suggest is that there is value everywhere. I heard somebody mention once that Saipan has no natural resources. In a discussion of value. But the leap of faith that's gonna have to be required is that we're gonna have to recognize that value exists in a lot of different ways, shapes, and forms, and that it's simply a matter of creative thinking that can have people recognize value that wasn't there before. So what I'd like to give is three different examples or three different ways of thinking about how we can re-stimulate the economy. Now, any change in the economic situation is going to have to happen on an individual level first.
Sure.
So one of the things that I'm going to first suggest is that from an individual basis, every individual, because of what I believe in terms of turning one's passion into profit, every individual has the ability to take something that they may not have recognized as value before and then make an income out of it. Okay. I've been coaching some people here on island, and I'll give you one example. There's a fellow who, in fact, I wrote about him in my article in the Saipan Tribune, Captain Carl mm-hmm, Bashir,
right,
who for years and years had a little book that he traveled around with. He was contemplated getting into the handyman business. So he bought a book years ago in 1991, and it was sitting in his, you know, in his home for years. And every time he moved, he traveled around with it. And he came to my workshop last year, and something clicked that he said, you know, that's a book that I always found very interesting. It would probably sell well on the internet. Real simple. Mm-hmm. A book that was sitting for 16 years generating no value. So he came to me and we decided to set up. I looked at the book. I agreed with him. It had some value. It's not something that existed currently because when the author wrote it first, it was the internet hadn't really taken off at that point. So we scanned the book and we put it up as a PDF document. We launched the website, and within about, I think, a week after we launched, he made his first sale, and then things kind of just took off from there. So... And it's completely done as an ebook, which means that we don't have to print any book, we don't have to mail anything across these, and people in America, people in the UK are buying his book. So from putting a little bit of effort, launching a website, advertising it on Google, he's generating a constant stream of income every day without doing a single thing. I've set it up in such a way that it's all turnkey. The people place their orders, and the ebook gets downloaded immediately and automatically to them. So that's that's one way that an individual, for example, can generate income.
Which comes back into the CNMI.
Right, which comes directly into someone living here. So that's an individual. Everyone has something like that, whether it's a passion, whether it's a book that they can write, whether it's a service that they can provide. Let's say you have someone who's a graphic artist. Now, that's something In my belief, the internet is one of the greatest tools that people can use, because then you're not limited to a clientele that's geographically based in your region.
That's so right.
You can sell your artwork. You can go to a website called Elance.com, for example, Elance, and you can put samples of your graphic art online. And anyone who's looking for an illustrator, for example, will go to Elance and you can generate income. And one of the things about Elance is you can see that it works, because if you sign up to the site and look at some of the projects, they actually track how much money people have made selling their artwork. So right now I'm looking for an illustrator for a book that I'm considering. So I put up a post on Elance and people have submitted their request to me, and and I can use that to find a graphic artist who could be anywhere across the world.
Okay.
So that's one way on an individual level that people can generate income. So then we can move to a group level or a family level. So how can an individual as a family generate income? I heard recently, someone mentioned to me that within the Korean community, and I hope I'm not giving away a major secret here, but apparently there's a program where an exchange student from Korea can come to Saipan and live with a Korean family, and they can generate, I won't mention the exact figure, but they can generate a sizable amount of change every month just for hosting this exchange student. So that's something that requires no change in anyone's, you don't have to create a product. You have this value, or just an empty couch in an apartment. So on a family level, you can generate income that way. Another idea, I was speaking to Angelo Villagomez of Beautify CNMI, and we were just brainstorming on ideas, and he actually thought of something. Remember I said that we're going to have to ask different questions. So someone looks at stimulating the economy and they say, okay, how are we going to get the hotels back up and prosperous?
Right.
And the question that I might suggest is, why do we need hotels? Hmm. Now, let's suppose that...
Hotels aren't going to like to hear that, of course.
But, right, of course. I know I'll be making some enemies today, but the hotels can get in on this too.
Okay.
So let's suppose that instead of the traditional model of where a tourist will stay when they come to Saipan, we change the model completely, shift the paradigm, and instead of a hotel that might take tourist dollars and take it back to whatever country that the tourists the hotel owners are from, we have a system of local families, sort of a bed and breakfast sort of network,
sure,
where tourists, and we market it just like we can market it on the web as a place and enjoy and experience the culture of Saipan from people who actually live here, rather than the traditional hotel experience. And it doesn't need to eliminate the hotel experience, but it can offer another option where the money comes directly into the families who live on Saipan and do nothing else except sharing their culture and their language with people who want to experience Saipan from a different perspective. So different question altogether. Why do we need hotels? Maybe we can structure something else. And that one, as I mentioned, Angelo, came up. So, but it's ideas like that and questioning the status quo, questioning why things have to be the way they are, that's going to be required in order to change things. And then on the third level, on a national level, there are different questions that can be asked. And I'll give you two examples of that. I was reading recently that in Papua New Guinea, that they've actually started processing coconut oil. And I haven't looked at the specifics of this, but I don't imagine there's a lot of processing needed.
Doing it in the Marshalls, too.
Okay, good. So you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
To fuel their diesel engines, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yep.
So somebody asked a really silly question. Someone said, wow, gas is getting really expensive. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And someone at a meeting said, hey, why do we need gas? And
then coconut oil.
Let's use coconut oil. And it burns cleaner.
Yeah.
So those sorts of questions. So now if it can happen in Papua New Guinea, what's to stop it from happening here except someone just addressing it and being more creative in their thinking?
Yeah.
So there's also something I mentioned in my article about carbon trading. Now again, a lot of these are just idealistic ideas, and I'm an idealist in my orientation, but there's something called carbon trading, where every country on the planet has been allocated a certain amount of carbon that they're allowed to emit into the atmosphere. So every country, based on, I guess, your size or your population, you have you can emit, based on your industries, a couple million tons. Now, if you're in an island, for example, that doesn't emit a lot of carbon, you have this carbon allowance that's basically sitting there, and you could be emitting millions of tons, but you're not. But there's another country right next to you that has an industry going, and they are getting dangerously close to reaching their maximum allowed limit of carbon, you trade. So companies, so countries on a global scale can trade their carbon allowances, and that's a way for you to establish a relationship with other company, other countries on a national level, and actually generate income that way. Another idea I'd like to put out there along the lines of the coconut oil is, did you know that you can actually, in addition to it being a food source, you can generate fuel and energy using algae? So
we got plenty of that out there.
Right, and yeah. It's real simple. Everyone can go in their backyard, put a pot of water out in the sun, and algae grow. Okay. So in addition to it being a food source, it can also be a source of energy. And again, I don't know the details of the processing that's involved and what's required, but it's just a different way of thinking about how to address. Now, if India can change its whole brand identity to being a place where companies, Fortune 500 companies, can outsource their call centers, then there's no reason, we have telephones here, there's no reason why people who speak English or whatever language, it doesn't have to be catering to the, you know, to an English-speaking market, but there's the opportunity for different industries to be started. Now, each one of these by themselves may not be the answer to stimulating the economy, but taken as a whole, whether SciPad becomes becomes a leader in ecopreneurism and starts, you know, marketing its noni or its herbs or the coconuts or the algae, people, if we address it on those levels, it may not have to do with tourism. It may not have to do with gambling. It could be a completely different paradigm that we have to buy into in order to re-stimulate the economy. But it's going to come from a different way of thinking, a different way of addressing that issue. So that's just that's for Pat, who asked me that question at the the Rotary Club.
Pretty good answer. Yeah.
That's my bigger answer. That it's multifaceted, it's multi-level, and this is just my perspective from as a business person, as an entrepreneur, someone who likes to think creatively, someone who doesn't look I don't use the P word if you've seen my, but not as a problem. I look at things as challenges. And again, knowing that there's value everywhere, there's no reason why we have to be stymied by the challenges that present us. There are opportunities for us to rise to the challenge and redefine Saipan in different ways and the economy and stimulate it that way.
And Walt, you do a Tribune column, and tell us when that comes out.
That's every Wednesday. It's called the Saipanpreneur Project.
Okay.
And it's to encourage people to think along these lines, to start their own business as well, and I give tips and advice on how to do that. And one other thing I would like to mention before you throw me out of here is the welovesaipan.com website that I'd like people to check out.
Sure.
And if I can tell a quick story about that, when I first came to Saipan, I did a little bit of initial research to find out what Saipan was like. And as a lot of people know, there wasn't a lot of information. I found out, you know, specifics about the topography and Mount Tapachao and that sort of thing. But there wasn't anything that really gave me a sense of what life was like here on Saipan. And there was one website in particular that was pretty negative that, you know, painted a really dismal picture. And since I came here to Saipan, I also ran into people who, in their travels to Saipan, also came across that other website. So it really just bothered me that because there was not that much information on Saipan, that a site like that I'm talking about, achieved such prominence and was tainting Saipan's brand identity. So I decided to do something about it. I started a website called welovesaipan.com. And I got together with Angelo Villa Gomez of Beautify CNMI, and he has a very popular blog here on Ireland, on the saipanblogger.com. And we launched the site. And when we launched it on December 6th of last year, we were on page 16 of a Google search for Saipan, which means if you were looking for information on Saipan and you typed in Saipan in Google, you'd have to scroll through 15 pages of listings in order to get to us.
Yeah.
4 months later, based on our efforts, we landed in the top 10. And are currently, if you do a search for Google, it might be 11, it might be 10 today, it varies sometimes. But you now, in addition to that other negative website, there's now a balance that we've been able to.
So when you say top 10, you may be on the front page then.
We're on the front page of Google listings for anyone doing a search on Saipan. So we're getting anywhere from 60, 70, 50 visits a day from people who are now, and then the feedback we've gotten from that is tremendous, because now people are seeing real life stories. And when you check out the site, basically it's just page after page or section after section of people who are telling why they love Saipan, why they moved here, all the great experiences, so photos as well. And people are getting now a balanced perspective of what life on Saipan is like, and people are now considering moving here to start business, to retire, to, you know, to live the paradise lifestyle that we seem to
dive every weekend.
So we can dive every in fact, one letter I got from another Saipanpreneur, Mike Tripp, talked about a fellow who saw his website, the Underwater World, and I know you've interviewed him here before, and is now considering coming to Saipan because he loves diving, and this seems to be the place.
It's paradise for it, yeah.
Right, the place to do it. So, so we love Saipan. I'd like everyone to check that out and help us keep that popular.
Very good. Walt, I appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for coming
in. Thanks a lot for having me.
And I'll have you back. We'll discuss a few more issues the next time. Cool. Louis, let's take time out for a commercial break. We've got one more topic to cover this morning. We'll be back right after these words from our sponsors.
Yeah, I apologize for
being
so long-winded.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, Christine's going to get to fill in.
Okay.
So, I thought he was out of school. Still going?
No, not yet.
Okay.
He has finals today.
Okay. Well, come on up, Christine.
Do you have a car?
Yeah.
Goodrich. Christina.
Hi.
Well, you know, I'm a teacher, so I just mentioned something I learned from your speech.
Can I hang on?
Absolutely, yeah. You don't have to, but you can hear the commercial, so you can cue in where we're going to go if you want.
I was going to be here just to support Will.
Sometimes things happen like that.
I was going to be here to support you. I don't know if you're
going
to stay. So
you're going
to do my finals.
It's easy. It's just a conversation.
Thank you. So that's what a co-conductor does.
Now, Christina, what's your last name?
Nieras.
Nieras? Okay.
Goodrich.
How long have you been out here now, Christina?
Oh,
okay.
Fourth year.
Oh, wow. You're a long-termer then.
From Saipan community, that's a pretty long term.
It is. I've known a lot of teachers that have come and gone through there.
And I know when you talked about those who are diving, I think those are Saipan community teachers.
Actually, most of them were from Grace Christian. I wound up taking a lot of them out. And I kind of got to be known up there as taking out whatever teachers because they can't afford to, you know, get certified and go. So I would just take them. So they would come to me and they're just like, any chance you'll take me out, just let me see it. And I'd take them out and they're like, oh, why didn't we do this sooner? And every single time.
Going tomorrow.
You really ought to give it a shot. I mean, it's a lot of fun. Okay, we're up. And we're back here on this Friday morning. Got a busy morning this morning, but that's okay. We got a weekend coming up. Our next guest in the studio, Christina Nieras. Good morning, Christina.
Morning. Thanks for having us and having me.
You didn't intend on being the guest this morning.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes things change. You got to go with the flow.
That's right.
Now, you're here representing the Pacific Winds Band. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Tell me what they've got coming up.
Well, first of all, I was just listening to Mr. Goodrich speak, and I totally believe that we need to find natural resources and find value in them. And I think Saipan Pacific Winds is a representation of that, of the talent that we have in the community.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we get to do a spring concert this weekend to show to everybody that this is what Saipan is all about, too, that there are people in the community who has another life, entertaining people and doing what they love. So we are having a concert at PIC at Charlie's on Saturday, and that will be at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Okay.
And then on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Now, what's the cost factor for these? Are they
Each ticket will be $5.
Okay.
And you can use the single ticket for both days.
Okay, so you can go, if you love the first day, go back for the second.
Yep, that's right.
Is it going to be the exact same performance both days?
No, there will be some few changes, and I can talk about that with the music later on, but I think some of the people who are listening right now would probably wonder, what is Saipan Pacific Winds?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to talk a little bit more. Since they're from the community, Saipan Pacific Winds have been offering music to Saipan for the past 13 years, and they've been playing continuously for those 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was started in 1994 with Mr. Will DeWitt and Steve Namkung. And they founded the group together with just 16 musicians.
Okay.
Now, in the year 2007, we have our 13th season coming up with 35 members, where 50% of them are students and then 50% from the larger community, which makes our group very diverse. So I say again, natural resources, talent in Saipan.
And it's a group that's always changing too.
Yes, every year they change. Yeah. Students change every year. People from other places come into Saipan and they're looking for a place to play, and then they hear about Saipan Pacific Winds and they're there.
Okay. Now, you guys just did a performance at the Memorial Day ceremony up at the Veterans Cemetery, is that right?
Yep, that's right. Okay. As part of a community, we just don't entertain, but we also perform things for the government. If they have any ceremonies, then we'll be doing the music for them as well.
Okay.
So patriotic music, yes, we're there.
Okay. And of course, a lot of people enjoyed having that music, and it just makes for a very nice ceremony when you've got the band playing there in the background and for the anthems and everything else. So
yes, yeah. We do it to honor the people here.
Okay. Yes. Now, Pacific Winds, like you said, is made up of some community members. This is not just students, but a lot of you have full-time jobs. This is something you just do for the love of it.
Yep, that's right. Okay. And I think some people would probably think, well, what is Saipan Pacific Winds? Why do they have 35 members? Mm-hmm. Isn't the band just drums, just guitars, and a couple of singers? It's like maybe the other 35 are backup singers? I don't know. Well, we're not. We're an ensemble.
Okay.
So then you will have flutes, clarinet, saxophones, trumpets, the lower brass section, and if people in the community don't know what they are, this is the opportunity to find out what these instruments are. And these are lawyers playing a bassoon or a trombone or a tuba.
Yep.
And what is that? I just know him as my lawyer. Or some people are board members or mm-hmm. they're teachers there and they're playing an instrument that they've been performing for years.
Yep.
Some of them, they probably just didn't pick it up before and then they decided, I want to do this again. And they discovered their passion all over again by being part of the Pacific Winds.
Okay. So. Now, the $5 ticket price, what does the $5 go toward?
That would go to just supporting the group to keep on, for us to buy some music,
okay.
and to continue entertaining. I think Saipan Pacific Winds is, our purpose is to get music that is diverse, mm-hmm. because we really want to get into a more broader audience,
okay.
a more broader audience that will come. And then we want something that's educating, because we do have students. We want to teach them music. We want them to learn music and how to read it. So that's educating right there. And then we want music that's entertaining. So at the same time, we're educating the students, and then we get to entertain people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at our music, we're playing Copacabana, and high school students are discovering Barry Manilow for the first time. And it's not just some disco remix they hear on the radio now. It's a Copacabana. It's Barry Manilow from the 70s. And then they get to hear that.
I always take flack because I was always a Barry Manilow fan. I always liked his music. So I always get flack from people. How could you like Barry Manilow? Hey, good music, come on.
That's right. And
so,
you get to hear Saipan Pacific Winds play that. And we're playing selections from Greece, and a lot of people would know that. Well, that's you're the one that I want reality TV show that's going on.
Right.
So it was John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John in the movie from Greece, and we're playing that from as well. They're also getting to know Benny Goodman.
Okay.
And
bands.
Yeah. I know it, and I'm over 30. Well, I'm 30, and I know Benny Goodman, but a lot of students are like, Benny Goodman. It's like, well, sing, sing, sing. Sing, sing, sing. Well, you get a chance to hear that in a concert.
Yeah.
So.
And you guys have also backed up some of the plays and the productions that have gone on in the past. I remember you being there.
That's right. They did Guys and Dolls, and that's why we were supporting the Friends of the Arts,
mm-hmm.
and they do all these plays, and then we get to do that for them as well.
Okay.
So that gives me a chance to say that we do, as a community effort, we have a lot of people in the community helping us, so I'd just like to take this time to talk about the sponsors as well and thanking them.
Sure.
So I'd like to thank Frank Spada and Ruth Coleman from the Veterans Affairs and the CNMI. That's why we had the Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
They always call us, and we're glad to support them, and they're always supporting us back. PHI Pharmacy has been really great help. Paradise Island Animal Hospital. Yeah, and in addition to lawyers, we have the veterinarian as well.
Okay.
The Marianas Eye Institute, Brilliant Star Montessori School, Pacific Islands Club, where we're having our venue,
mm-hmm.
Saipan Southern High School with Mr. Liao, who's always supporting us as well, and
okay.
a lot of our students came from that high school. Saipan Friends of the Arts, as much as we play for them for their productions, they also support us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this radio station, who I'm allowed to speak surprisingly this morning.
And you did just fine. Is this your first time on radio?
No.
Okay. Well, see, you're an old pro then.
So not no worries. Really. Just, I like to talk as much as you.
Well, you're in good company with Walt and I this morning, then. So, yeah.
I listened.
Well, Christina, very good. And is there anything else that we need to know, like where to buy the tickets or if we need to get them in advance?
Well, they can buy the tickets from the members who are doing it. And just to let you know that in addition to knowing what flutes are, yeah, if you know who Leila Kudsi is and Gail Martin, you always see her in Tagaman, and Leila Kudsi, she was in Tagaman as well. They're playing a flute duet, and they're having a brass quintet as well. So these are some names of the members that you can get them from, and also it will be open at the door.
Okay.
I'd like to also thank the officers. If you know David Butcher, he mm-hmm. teaches over at Kagman High, and Zandra who's also in Saipan Community School, and they're very active members of the community. You can get tickets from them as well. And Lois DeWitt, who's our secretary as well, you can get tickets from them.
Okay, so. Wonderful. But again, if you don't know any of those people, you can get them at the door. Don't
yes.
let that stop you.
So at PIC Charlie's, everybody knows where that is.
And again, the times?
7 o'clock on Saturday and 3 o'clock on Sunday. Cool. And they can use one ticket for both days.
Okay, wonderful. Christina, thank you very much for coming in this morning. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Thank
and,
you very much.
Will, we're sorry that we didn't get you on sooner, but thanks for coming in and showing up this morning. We appreciate that, too. That's going to do it for us this morning on Island Issues. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back Monday morning with more 7 o'clock bright and early. Until then, more on 103.9 KZMI.